Hi, and welcome back to the Coffee, Cake, and Kegels podcast. I'm your host, Stacey. And today I wanted to talk about medical gaslighting. And I also have a very special guest with me today who is going to share her story, how she was medically gaslit and then suffered a very, very horrific price for it. Thank God, though, she's here today to tell her story and to help educate other women. But just to get an idea of what medical gaslighting is, it's basically when you go to your doctor and you complain of symptoms that you have and they dismiss you. They'll tell you it's anxiety when it's in fact a heart attack. Or they will tell you, you're fine, you're fine, you're fine. It was done to me for years with my thyroid levels. I was told I was fine. Stacey, you're fine. It's in your head. I was told that by a female doctor numerous times, when in fact I had hypothyroidism. So there is this horrific, I don't even know what to call it, it's a travesty happening in our country where Black women are not receiving proper care when they are pregnant and when they are, you know, after pregnancy, so post-pregnancy. And my guest today, Alicia Prestia, she's a social worker, she's a therapist, and she's the creator of Talk and Energy. And she's with us today to tell her story of how she endured this trauma of being medically gaslit, and on top of that, suffering from cardiomyopathy, which she will explain. And we're hoping that this can help other women and raise awareness. So, Alicia, thank you so much for being my guest today. Welcome.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So, okay. So, from the beginning, tell us exactly what happened. Tell us from the beginning.
Okay. So, I'll tell you from when I went into labor.
Okay.
And then after everything happened, I did a lot of research on my own and then found patterns of things that were happening before. So I'll kind of circle back because that's how I generally tell the story. But just FYI, because you're going to be like, why is she going backwards? Well, because I didn't figure out these things until after I was diagnosed. Okay. So on October 14th, I gave birth to my daughter. When my husband and I arrived at the hospital, in my head, I was like, you know, I want to do a natural labor. I don't want any medications. I just want to push her out and, you know, work through whatever challenges I have and just have the baby. But when we got there, my blood pressure was elevated and they're like, you absolutely cannot, you know, you can do what you want, but you're going to be bedridden for the duration of your labor because of your high blood pressure. We have to give you medications. So, you know, pretty much since like I arrived at the hospital, got checked in, they checked my blood pressure. I was put on a magnesium drip. They also gave me, I was on several different blood pressure medications throughout my labor, just because my blood pressure kept elevating. It was never really stable. And so I gave birth to my daughter. She arrived at like 7:30 on the 14th, and we left the hospital on the 16th around 1 p.m., give or take. Around 1:30. So when I was discharged from the hospital, my blood pressure was high. They're like, oh, you'll be fine. You know, just continue taking your blood pressure medication and we'll see you, you know, for your follow-up appointment. No worries, concerns, no. I wasn't concerned. They made it seem like it was normal leaving the hospital with blood pressure at like 146.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah, right. Not normal, but that was the norm. So, okay, I leave, I go home. My husband and I are home for maybe an hour, 20 minutes, an hour. He goes out to the store, to the pharmacy to get my blood pressure medication. Which I found out after my second stay in the hospital that they actually have a pharmacy there where you can pick up your medication when you're discharged. But anyway, so he went out to the store, he got a blood pressure cup, he got my medications, and he's out, and I'm developing this cough. So I call the midwife, and I'm like, hey, you know, I'm developing this cough, it's just coming out of nowhere. And they're like, oh, you know, just take some cough medicine, you'll be fine. I'm like, okay. And then it's getting worse, and I'm like, call again. They say the same thing, maybe try some tea. Right. So I call my neighbor over, sweet lady. She comes and brings me tea. I'm like, now this cough is really severe. And I'm like, you know, it's not COVID because, you know, people are still concerned about COVID. I just, you know, I'm just developing it. The midwife said it's normal. I just need some tea and some cough medicine.
So wait, I'm sorry. You know, I have to just jump in only because, again, so for those listening, obviously, Alaysia and I have had lunch together. I've heard her story. And every time, I'm sorry, I get so angry for you. They knew you had high blood pressure, and coughing is a direct sign of heart failure, heart issues happening.
Right.
And how do you not know that? Yeah, how do you not know that as a medical professional? Hello, you know? So, okay, go ahead.
Right. And so my diagnosis when I left was preeclampsia with severe features. So it wasn't like it was moderate or mild, you know, it was with severe features, which I think is very noteworthy. Like, you know, I was discharged with this and I have this cough. Again, things that I learned afterwards. And so it's getting worse. I'm calling them again. They're like, oh, you know, if you want to come back to the hospital, you can, but you know, with COVID and the newborn baby, do you want to? And I'm like, I'll see if, you know, this tea and cough medicine works. So it doesn't. So I end up calling my husband and I'm like, you know, I just worry. I need you to be home soon, but I don't want him to rush and be in a panic and get there because, you know, I'm panicking slightly on the inside. And so he gets home, and so after this, things kind of get spotty. And so, like, I don't remember getting the baby in the car seat. I don't remember getting the baby in the car. I don't remember getting in the car. I remember leaning on the car. It's like, I don't even remember him getting home. I just remember leaning on the car, one of my neighbors, like, waving, and, like, I didn't have the breath to, like, wave back to them, or, like, I was leaning on the car because I didn't have the strength to make it into the car. Like, there's where I'm sure the shortness of breath and then out of consciousness started, because I don't remember that part. And then I kind of remember being in the emergency room. The one thing I really remember from the ER is a nurse telling me I'm having a panic attack.
Oh my God.
And I remember just I remember telling, like, yelling at this woman, like, I'm not having a panic attack. I remember saying, I'm a fucking mental health professional. Like, this is not a panic attack. And that is all that I remember from the ER. And, like, I feel like that event was so traumatic for me that I do remember it out of everything else that I forgot. Like, that part, that memory is so clear, where everything else, I don't remember going into the ER. I don't remember anything else, but I remember telling this woman that I am not having a panic attack. Like, this is not it. So if you talk to my husband, you know, he got me there. He got me in the ER. They're trying to put me in a mask. I couldn't breathe. And they're trying to, you know, tell him to put me in a mask. They were kicking. He actually got kicked out of the ER. They pretty much called him back to say, so he's outside again with my newborn baby in the car. And they called him back in to say, you know, try and calm her down, you know, just, you know, we don't know what it'll be. So just be here with her at this time, you know? And so I say I had the easy part because I don't remember any of this. But my husband does.
Okay.
Sorry, I swear, I get emotional.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I mean, how could you not? How could this not draw emotion? You were a new mom with an infant and not receiving proper care.
Yeah. And so this is where, you know, I don't remember, but I told my husband goodbye and, you know, what, you know. And so this was pretty much it as far as I knew at that time, but again, I don't recall. And so I guess at this time I did go into cardiac arrest. I was in cardiac arrest for over 3 minutes. And this is when, you know, we can start losing brain function. And so they had to put me on the ventilator. And they, you know, the doctor comes out and tells my husband, sorry, we lost her. Oh. But we got her back. You don't start off with, sorry, we lost her, but we got her back. You don't do that, you know? So I can only imagine what that feels like for him. But, you know, luckily I was okay. So there were so many things that I wasn't aware of that happened that just kind of upset me. So my daughter's godmother, my best friend Tammy that was there for me, like, she'd come with me to the doctor's appointments, like, so supportive. She had made it to the hospital after a certain point, and she got in and she, you know, she said that she was my husband's sister. And so they let her in, and, you know, the nurses were talking about calling Child Protective Services for my daughter because there was no one there to care for her.
Oh my God.
Right. And so to my understanding, my daughter, they had at that point, it was just Jake and I at the hospital until Tammy arrived. So my daughter was in they put her in a closet, and a nurse was just kind of sitting with her in the closet. And then Tammy arrived, so she was able to sit with her. And then my in-laws arrived. And so even at that point, there's so many things that were happening that I don't know about, but I just hear stories about, right? So, apparently I was in a room. It was a mess. There was blood, dripping out of my nose, dried blood all over my face. And so, my family's there cleaning me up and doing things, which I feel like, you know, the nurses probably could have taken a minute or two so that they didn't have to see me like that.
Of course.
But that's beyond the point, you know, I'm here, I'm happy, but, you know, there were just so many things that I hear about that happened while I was in the ER that were not pleasant to hear. And so then from there, I was actually on a ventilator for 7 days, because the doctor, not doctors, I would just say that they weren't able to get a leak to take the ventilator out. So I was stuck on the ventilator for 7 days. And on the last day, so there's, again, spots of things that I can remember, but I was sedated for the majority of the time that I was on the ventilator. And I think they would take me out to ask questions, see if they could get a leak, and then they just kind of put me back under sedation. And so on the last day, I remember they were taking the ventilator out, or this is the day that they had the leak where they could take the ventilator out. And I remember being on the ventilator and a nurse coming in and saying, I'm going to sedate you. And at this point, I'm fully conscious. I'm alert. I know what I'm doing. I know things. It's not foggy. It's clear. And I just remember they're saying, I'm going to give you just a little bit more medications. And I'm I really don't want them. I feel good. So I know all of these memories. I have them somewhere in my memory, in the subconscious. Mm-hmm. But I just because so many things were happening where it was connecting, where I remember begging this nurse not to give me more medication. I can feel more. I still have notebooks where I wrote, because I wasn't able to talk, where I was writing things down. And I remember asking her, can I just say this? I feel comfortable. I'm fine. And I remember her saying, it's this or no medication. I put you up or I don't put you on anything at all. And then, you know, I'm a stubborn woman. Like, I want what I want, and that's it. So I'm like, then take me off the medication then. Bad decision. Very uncomfortable. Very, very uncomfortable. And so then my husband comes back in the room, and the same nurse is there. And I tell him, like, I need more medication, but, like, I don't want to go higher than where I was because I know what's happening. I don't feel foggy. And so he calls the nurse in, and miraculously, she's able to put me on the same dose that I was on, where I was still conscious but not uncomfortable.
Of course, because you had someone there advocating.
Right, absolutely. And my husband's like, this is why I've been afraid to leave you even for a few minutes. Like, he just went downstairs to get a snack and came back, you know? Mm-hmm. And thankfully that was it, because, you know, then I would have just been sitting in discomfort. My call button and the, you know, they say I had like the Bentley of hospital beds in the ICU. With my Bentley, the remote was broken twice. They replaced it twice. And so I couldn't even use it to press the call button if I wanted to, right? So there were so many things that were happening. And so from there, like, they were able to get the ventilator out. And then I was transferred to the cardiac floor, which was much more pleasant. So also, while I was on the ICU, they're like, oh, you know, I really still don't know what happened, right? I don't know that I went into cardiac arrest. I don't know that I had heart failure. I don't even know where I'm at. And these are questions that I'm afraid to ask because I don't want to know the answers to. Like, what if something really bad happened? Or what if, you know, which something really bad did happen, but like, how am I going to handle this, right? And so I'm just in this room facing a hallway where I see people walking past. Like, I don't know what day it is. I don't know what is it morning? Is it night? I just don't know. I'm afraid to ask all these questions. Like, I remember one point a nurse asking me, oh, can you move your legs? I don't know. And this was because I don't know what they're called, but they put little cuffs on your leg, yes, to keep the blood circulating.
Yeah.
And so those were off of my legs, and she's like, these shouldn't be off, like, you know, look at your leg. And like, the last thing I remember, I'm all swollen, everything is swollen, my ankles are huge. When I say huge, I'm a size 7, I was wearing 8.5 wide when I delivered, so my feet were huge, and now they're like skinny. Like, I'm smaller than I was before I got pregnant, right? When I was pregnant, I was like 175, 180, right? And then when I left the hospital, I was about 165. So when she's asking me this question, I'm like, I have no idea. And I'm afraid to try because I don't want to try and move my legs, and I can't, right? Thankfully, I was able to move them. Okay, so something else that happened while I was in the ICU, which supposedly is actually quite common from what I'm hearing from other nurses, but I was on the ventilator, and I aspirated, I threw up. My husband went down while they changed me and changed my bedding, and like, he, you know, he's like, I'll go out and come back. And so when he came back, he said I had vomit all over myself. Now, I was on a feeding tube for maybe 2 days, but like the first 5 days that I was there, they didn't give me food because each day they were hoping, like, oh, we'll take the ventilator out and then we'll see if she can eat. But that never happened. Again, for 7 days. So then I think on like the fifth day, my husband was advocating, like, you know, she hasn't eaten in days, she needs something. And so they put me on a feeding tube. So anyway, I caught aspirated pneumonia while there from throwing up while I was on the ventilator. And so then I had fevers that they couldn't get down. And so for my family that was there, like, that I say lived through this, I feel like they had the hard part of watching me struggle, right? And watching me recover, but thankfully I did. And then on my last day, I'm just going to fast forward because the cardiac floor was kind of a breeze compared to the ICU. Like, I felt like the nurses were more patient. caring. I did have a few great nurses on the ICU. But I wasn't awake for really 7 days. So on the fast forward to the last day on the cardiac floor, it's the morning where, the nurses are giving me, I believe, digoxin because I'm in the bed and not working, walking or moving. So they're like, we'll give you this, prevent blood clots, and so on and so forth. And they're like, oh, this is your last day getting it. And this is, I think the day before or 2 days before, this is your last day, your last one, you'll be leaving tomorrow. And I'm all excited. And we'll fast forward through the part where I was supposed to get physical therapy and I never actually got it. We'll skip through that part.
That doesn't surprise me.
So a physical therapist came down and, for ethical reasons, she couldn't work with me, which completely fine. And, she's like, I'll have to talk to my supervisor about getting you reassigned. And, she even came down the next day to check to see if they sent someone else down. She's like, I did it. I put in the request to have you reassigned. Someone should have been down. And I'm like, no. And she's like, definitely tomorrow. And this person came down a couple times to check and it just never happened. So someone dropped the ball there. And then, so my last day there, I'm getting up, so now I'm able to get up and walk. I have a little shuffle going, but I was very proud of my shuffle because I could actually stand, where before when I was in the ICU and the nurses would change me, I could barely, I couldn't turn to the side, but if they turned me, I could hold on to the railing and just hold on to the side, and then vice versa, just because my muscles atrophied from being on so many medications, not moving.
Right.
It's amazing what happens in 7 days. So now I'm like, I can get up, I can shuffle. Yesterday was supposed to be my last day, but today's my last day. I'm going to go shower and da-da-da-da. So I'm talking to my roommate. I had this wonderful woman in the bed next to me. My first roommate left, I think, that night I got there. The second one wasn't so nice. She made a point to make sure that I heard that, people come to the hospital and that they're lazy and they don't want to change their beds and they want nurses to do everything for them and this and that. And like, these are all things that I'm not able to do. Like, I can't make my bed. I can barely stand. I'm literally shuffling and holding on to things to like get places. But anyway, so then, I got a good roomie. And so I'm walking to the bathroom and she's like, just saying, I'm so proud of you. Look at what you're doing. Like, you're standing and, we're just standing and we're chit chatting. And then I get really lightheaded, like extremely lightheaded. And then I pass out. And this is the day that I'm leaving. And so now a nurse actually was there and caught me. I don't know how she caught me. And she's like emphasizing, like, you did not hit the ground. I was here to catch you. And I'm like, she's like, 'cause that's a whole nother report. And I'm like, I can't confirm or deny. I just know that I blacked out and like that I don't remember. And I just, opened my eyes and now there's all these nurses and doctors and residents standing around me and checking my blood pressure, drawing my blood, and so what the doctors had happened is that they were over aggressively treating my blood pressure. Oh. As though I haven't been through enough. And at this point, I'm telling my husband, I'm like, I feel, again, I don't fully understand, cardiomyopathy, the cardiac arrest part. I don't think that was mentioned at that point to me. But I told him, I'm like, I feel like I'm getting worse staying here. I don't want to leave against medical advice, but I really don't trust that I'm getting what I need. And if they're saying that I'm okay, then, I feel like at this point, the treatment that I'm getting, I would be better off with outpatient treatment. Mm-hmm. Essentially is kind of where is how I was feeling because I'm like, they're not even checking my blood pressure enough to know that my blood pressure is dropping. they're just giving me medications because it's just, you know, let me just give you medication. Let me just give you medication.
That's it.
And then
everything in the, everything is throw a pill at someone, you know, just throw a pill.
Yeah. Like, do you want to check my blood pressure before you throw this pill at me? You know, like, do you want to check my sugar before, you know, like, it's just like, they weren't checking. I'm like, at least I have control over, you know, I can check my blood pressure on my own, you know, and see what's that in my head, you know. And so the doctor ended up letting us discharge. So we didn't leave against medical advice. He said, you know, what happened was just an accident. Just make sure you check your blood pressure and, you know, take your medications, see your follow-up appointments. And so that was pretty much it. And so with the discharge, I found a cardiologist who's great. My primary at the time, I feel like, wasn't catering to me, I would say. So he... Like, when I got discharged, I'm like, oh, you know, it's bedside manner for me, right? So I just had a baby. I just had heart failure. I just went into cardiac arrest. And I'm trying to explain to you what happened. So from the cardiomyopathy, I also had pulmonary edema because the blood was pumping. The reason I couldn't breathe, the reason I had the shortness of breath was the heart failure was causing the blood to pump into my lungs. Mm-hmm. And so then I was essentially drowning. So I'm, you know, just explaining everything to the doctor. And he's like, yeah, this causes that. It's okay, I got it. So these are your medications. Yeah, okay. We're going to get you off of these. Just stop taking this one. And I'm like, you haven't even read my chart. You know, I felt like, did you even read my chart? Did you read my notes? Like, I just got the hospital 2 days ago and you're taking me off medication. Like, are we sure that this is safe? You know, is this best practice? And he's like, all right, well, you know, you have an appointment with your cardiologist. When you see the cardiologist, ask them and so on and so forth. And so I was tracking my blood pressure, writing it down. And I was averaging around like 110 over like 70 or lower. So between 100 and 110 is where my blood pressures were. So then I ended up tapering off of the blood pressure medications. And so now my heart is it's healed. So it just functions a little bit lower than normal from the scar, which is, you know, I feel like the least that I could ask. It's really, really, honestly, for me, it's in real life, it's best case scenario. Like, there's so many other women who went through what I went through and did not make it.
Absolutely.
Or are still recovering or, you know, don't have the same functionality. And so now, like, things that I'm often concerned about is like, am I going to have a stroke? Am I going to have a heart attack? If it's going to happen, when will it happen? Will I know? And you know, what will happen for my daughter and husband is often a thought that I have, just because you never know. And I have, you know, I am part of a peripartum cardiomyopathy community. And like, we see that it happens, but there's also women out there who, you know, have been in recovery for 10, 20, 30, 40 years and haven't had, any additional heart issues. So,
yeah.
So that's my story. But I feel like, and you know, the doctor said if I would have arrived 10 minutes later, I wouldn't have made it. Right. And so every minute is important. If that nurse would have actually sent me to psych, you know, would I have gotten the treatment that I got when I got it? You know, like, what would have really happened? Because she was sending me for a psych evaluation that I was having a panic attack, and that was it. Like, what about my blood pressure? What about my oxygen levels? What about, because once I, you know, read through my chart and I see all these things, it's like my blood pressure was over 200. Like, Did you assess that before you referred me to psych? Did, you know, my oxygen levels were at like 20%, you know, like, I feel like this is pretty basic assessments. Like I have a blood pressure cup. Now I have a, well, I don't know, pulse ox machine that I carry around with me.
Yeah, I was going to tell you.
You know, like, that would have taken 2 minutes of your time, ma'am. 2 minutes. And even when I read up my notes, like, eventually I was, you know, coughing up a reddish, pinkish, I don't know what they call it, the medical term, liquid is what I'll call it. Like, there were just so many things that were happening. The way that they treated my husband, you know, that was just unreal, unreal. And I feel like it started with the phone, you know, the phone calls. The initial phone calls, I'm coughing, the cough is getting worse, you know, and then just went ignored. And then, so circling back, if you look up like just symptoms of cardiomyopathy, they do align a lot with medical with pregnancy, but it's just like, just take a second look. How long does it take for a doctor to like take a second look, like with the swelling of my ankles, you know, my high blood pressure. The week before I gave birth, I went in there, my blood pressure was 140. It was, you know, borderline high. It was high. It was 140 over, I don't remember. They waited 15 minutes and it was 138 over something. You know, at that point, I feel like, you know, could I have just been even referred to the hospital to have like a second look, a second opinion? Because that was the week before I went into labor.
So, you know, I'm so glad that you are here to tell your story. You know, obviously, I can't even really find the words to express that, you know. I can't even imagine what it felt like for the fear you must have had as a new mother. You know, I mean, women come home from the hospital with a baby and you're like, okay, you know, it's time to be a mom now. It's time to create a family life. It's, you know, like all these things that we have in our heads when we have a baby, you know,
yeah.
And your story, you know, you didn't get to have that initially. You had all mm-hmm. these major, major bumps in your road, you know, of motherhood at the, you know, in the early stages when, you know, you should be bonding with your child, like all these different things, you know, so it's just, it's devastating. Yeah. And then to think of your husband, what was going through his head and your family, like your parents and his parents and, you know, it's just, it's insane. And it's, what's insane is that, you know, just in like looking up research and everything about cardiomyopathy. So in our country alone, there's like a 19% mortality rate for pregnant, for, you know, women who are pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
But for women of color, it's 43% per 100,000 die. So what is going on? And it, black women are 5 times more likely to die from cardiomyopathy and blood pressure disorders than white women. So, and this is like a simple Google search. Why aren't doctors looking this up? You know what I mean? Where is the disconnect? I can't seem to understand and wrap my head around that in this day and age.
Right. And I think, you know, I've done a little bit of research and I feel like some medical professionals will acknowledge it and others won't, just like general people will acknowledge and some others don't, is the bias.
Yeah.
And just like, just take that second look. What else can it be? You know, or even let's actually treat this, let's explore these symptoms that you're reporting. Let's not just brush them off.
I mean, just in your line of work as a therapist, you know, and as a Reiki practitioner, because you do both. If someone came to you expressing certain things, I mean, would you just be like, oh, it's just anxiety?
No, hearing every detail. You know, honestly, so my personal and professional slogan is when in doubt, refer out. Because even if I don't have there might be times where I don't have the knowledge, I'm not sure. I'm going to refer out. So even if someone has, let's say, anxiety, right, and we're noticing it's not getting better, or they report other symptoms where I'm like, you know, this might be something else. If I even have that thought, if that's even a thought that crosses my mind, I'm not going to be like, well, let me keep treating it how I think it is. I'm like, you know, why don't we, you know, go for an evaluation? Why don't we coordinate with our primary care doctor? Why don't we explore other options? And at the very least, we rule out something else, right? It might just be anxiety, but let's at least rule out the other thing that it could possibly be. Or maybe we might find that it is something else, like even with like anxiety, maybe it's hyperthyroidism. Maybe not. I don't know. Right. But like, why not check? What does it hurt to check?
Exactly. Yeah. That's, you know, even me, I was put on blood pressure medication, because my adrenal glands were out of whack, but no one checked that. No one checked that. They just put me on medicine.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, I don't even need this medicine. It didn't resonate with me, you know, because I always go by my intuition. So I'm like, this is not resonating. I don't need this medicine, but I have to take it now. Now my body's dependent on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you know, from being on blood pressure medicine, you can't just come off of it.
Great.
You know, but yeah. I'm like, no one just does the extra legwork. What does it take to run extra lab work or whatever? What does it take? Really not much. They're not paying for it, you know?
Literally, exactly. And my exact thoughts. What does it hurt? What would it have hurt for the hospital to keep me? So I had gestational, I was high risk. I had gestational diabetes. I had anemia. I had the preeclampsia. What would it have hurt for them to even keep me there for 48 hours after delivery? Because all of this happened within 48 hours of me giving birth. But I was out of the hospital before the 48 hours.
Well, I mean, I think in our country, because we're the only country that basically lets women give birth and then pushes them out so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one size fits all. I notice when it's especially geared towards women. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, 6 weeks, you go back to work. What if you're not recovered in 6 weeks? Not, great. It's not one size fits all.
No.
You know, and, but men, on the other hand, you know, if I might, like my husband had shoulder surgery, they were like, oh, you can't work for 6 months. I'm like, what?
Great. Well, even, you know, even after everything, right, I go to the OB. Now, mind you, my follow-up visits, my husband's coming with me, Tammy's coming with me, my mom's up the whole time because I, you know, regular household chores and things like that, like we need help, right? I needed help going up the stairs. The first, I don't know, week that I was home, I could only hold my baby if I was sitting down, right? Because now I have to regain muscle strength and I'm just afraid, the anxiety, let alone, you know, what if I pass out while I'm holding her, you know? So it took me probably 2 to 3 weeks before I would even stand up with my daughter. But even, you know, at the OB, writing me out for work, oh, okay, well, we can only write you out for 6 weeks, at most 8. Okay.
After everything you went through?
Yeah. Eight weeks. And like, I couldn't even, you know, I have a purse filled with everything, like everything. It's heavy, which means I couldn't carry it. So even like, we went to one OB appointment and my husband, you know, he has to carry my purse. They're like, "Oh, usually don't let men in here. You know, it has to be women only." And I'm like, "All right, well, who's gonna carry my purse?" And then, you know, eventually, I guess they saw my condition and they were like, "Oh, okay, he can come." You know?
How absurd.
But it's just like, you know, we need support. And I mean, in real life, that even would have been helpful to know before I went to the appointment. Like, no one else can come with you. You can't have men in the lobby or just, I don't know. There's just so many things afterwards, part of the recovery, like the shortness of breath. So I had asked, I was like, you know, maybe I could just get, while I'm recovering, a temporary handicap sticker just so, you know, I can do things that make me feel normal, like go to the grocery store or, you know, because walking, it was hard. I didn't have the lung capacity, the strength, the oxygen to do these things. And then it's also like, okay, well, I need to sit down. Mentally, I can't. Unless I physically have to, I can't. And so, like, you know, we'd go to Walmart and I'd be in one of those little scooter carts because I definitely could not walk the store, let alone walking into the store from a far parking spot. There's just so many small things, and I just felt like they were just like no to the temporary handicap sticker. Okay, yes, you can go back to work. Mind you, I'm a therapist, so I talk for work, right? I didn't have a voice, or they're like, "Oh, it'll come back. They'll come back." So I'm seeing the ENT, and he's like, "Oh, you know, like I don't know, the one side of my throat was swollen, and the other side wasn't, and that's why it wasn't healing. Then I had silent reflux, and so like my vocal cords weren't really catching. So I ended up doing voice therapy. I finished, and I want to say May, March. I want to say March or May, April or May, probably April or May. Because I did do that for a few months. But when I left the hospital, they're like, "Oh, your voice will be back in 2 weeks."
Yeah.
2 weeks
Right.
later, and I'm like, I can bear, like I. It would just be easier for me not to talk. Like I'd have to whisper. I couldn't talk loud. Even now, if I just like. If I go to a family function or somewhere where people are talking loud, I go out and it's loud. I'm going to be, I am first person to lose the voice. It's just gone. The first person to have a sore throat, it just happens and it sucks. But like, I'm like, at least that's all it is. At least I can talk, you know? You know, there's still some things that happen, but it's just all part of the recovery. I do wish that medical professionals were more supportive. And hopefully, like in the future, that changes. But there are
Yeah.
just a lot of small things along the way where I'm like, "Oh, maybe this would be helpful. Maybe that, you know, could this help me?" And it's like, no, yeah, you can go back to work. It's like, all right. You know, I obviously I can't go back to work because I can't talk. And then like once I finally met with the voice therapist, and she's like, "You can't talk for more than 2 hours at a time." You know, and this isn't until like January, February, I start seeing a voice therapist because everyone's saying, you know, "Oh, it'll come back, it'll come back, it'll come back." And she's like, "You need an hour of rest and you can't talk for more than 2 consecutive hours." Well, that's 2 appointments, you know, like,
Right, yeah. And then meanwhile, they cleared you. They're like, "You're good. Go back to work."
yeah, go to work. Okay, all right. So even just transitioning back to work was an adjustment, even though I didn't go back until later. But like making my schedule, I made sure I put extra spaces in there so that I gave my voice time to recovery.
It's just crazy what you went through. You know, from the beginning to the end. But obviously, I mean, you know, and you know this too because you work with energy also, and like everything was meant to happen in this way. because you needed, you needed, yeah, because this was like a way for you to educate other people or maybe open your eyes to something or whatever, like whatever the lesson was.
I feel like I've had so many lessons. So even when we talk about even energy, right?
Right.
When I came out of the, when I came off the ventilator, off the sedation, and I was like fully alert, I felt people were sending me Reiki and, you know, different types of energy healing. I can't describe the feeling that I felt. I just felt like a rush of like energy and balance downloading into my body. Like I told my, the way that I describe it is when I walked down the aisle with my husband, to my husband, and they were, you know, surrounded by friends and family and everyone's just looking at you walk down the aisle. Like that day, I felt the most love I've ever felt ever in my life, right? Take that and times it by 1,000. And that was the feeling that I got when I came off of everything. And I felt like I just felt all of the energy, like just such strong, just like everything downloading into every single part of my body. And when they took me off of the medications, they said that I would go through like withdrawal. I didn't experience any withdrawal symptoms. And I really, I think that that was just the energy working, balancing my body and restoring my body. Like I didn't experience them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I was, you know, I mean, I'm going to use the least medical term I can. I was doped up for a week straight and didn't experience withdrawal symptoms. How does that happen?
Yeah, because usually you would. I mean, you'd at least feel, you'd even sweat, something. There'd be something.
Something.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Wow. Energy works, man.
It absolutely does.
You know, for the people who don't believe, it works.
So it works. They're like, you know, explain to my husband, you're going to have to prepare yourself, you know, this, that, and third, nothing.
Yeah. So now, what, so you obviously, you share your story, you're very open with it, you've done it on social media, so you're raising awareness, and now, you know, just to close up our episode, where can people find you?
They can find me on, like, Instagram. Follow me at Talkin' Energy. I have an website, talkinenergy.com. On Instagram, also my personal page, Laisha K. I'm there. You can Google me. I'm there.
Awesome.
And then you can also, if you ever wanted to email me, my email's my name, so alaishaprestia@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your story and being so candid and, you know, raising this awareness. I'm really grateful to have had you on today as a guest. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And that's all for today, guys. Have a great day.